Hello and welcome back to another episode of Fund Friday. Today we've got a unique and special guest today. He is the first probably non-real estate fully full-time individual or capital raiser that we've had on this show before, which is super special in my opinion. He is becoming a fast friend. He is an investor of Lone Star Capital, which is a big feat as we'll get into going on and unwinding and unpacking in the show. But please welcome to the show the lead god, the CEO and founder of Direct Funding Now, Ken Meneese. How are you today?
Good, man. Thanks so much for having me on. And as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you guys and excited to, share a little bit of insights, maybe some wins, some losses, and just share my experiences of what I've gone through on my entrepreneurial journey.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that's exactly what we want to talk about is entrepreneurship and the stresses associated with it, getting a company from the thin air to where it is right now, where you're expansively hiring and crushing it in this marketplace right now. So with that said, can you tell us a little bit about Direct Funding Now, kind of your origin story and backing, and maybe some of the businesses that you've started along the way to get to the winner that you're cultivating right now?
Yeah, of course. So I'll start off with what my company does. So we offer business financing to small businesses nationwide in the US. So we offer working capital anywhere from $5,000 all the way to $2 million. Now, the benefit of working with Direct Funding Now is we basically streamline the process, we cut the red tape, and we get approvals and offers out to our customers that qualify quickly within a couple hours or 24 hours. So they can decide how much capital they need, the terms, all that good stuff, so they can move forward with their business. Versus, in the past and currently, people go to the banks and it takes 3 weeks, 4 weeks to get some funding for your business, and it's too long, right? So businesses need capital quick, and they need the access now to essentially eliminate the problems in their business or an opportunity. So that's where we come in. We had a nice little niche, and we use technology, we use partnerships to lend out our capital quickly to support small businesses every single day. Over 500 customers a month that we're funding currently, and it's growing. So,
That's amazing. And is this kind of like a direct competition to like an SBA loan would be effectively, but more on up on the private side, as you alluded to, as opposed to a bank?
yeah, no, I mean, we actually offer SBA products as well. So it's more short-term capital, anywhere from like 12 to 24 months. But we also offer like lines of credit, equipment financing, essentially a one-stop shop for a business to come to get a variety of different options, right? So you can kind of come to our place, a business online, and see what options are available for you, and you can choose the best option for your company. Now we have the partnerships already signed up for our company. We lend out internally as well. So we have a bunch of different things available for you. All you have to do is apply. You get to figure out your options and kind of go from there.
Awesome. So what are, just out of curiosity, are some of the types of businesses that you provide funding for? Like, typically speaking, what's the profile, or is it totally varying across the board?
Yeah, it's varying. I mean, we fund almost every industry. Now there is industries that are a little bit more riskier than others, but yeah, we fund most industries, basically running businesses. So it's a lot of mom and pop shops, companies doing maybe, anywhere from $250,000 a year in gross annual revenue to maybe, 30 million is kind of our demographic that we see a year, right? So they're businesses that just need capital for payroll, equipment, hiring, scaling, expansion, or just general bill pay expenses, right? We're just that go-to shop where people can go to get capital quickly and move on with their business. So we work with a variety of companies, different SIC codes, but there's not too many limitations of what we can fund.
Interesting. And are these businesses, maybe you kind of answered it there, but that are kind of in all phases of their growth process, whether it be just getting off the ground, needing to expand, or kind of in a payroll crunch where they need to basically deploy equity out to their employees to keep, the lights on?
Yeah, 100%. And just there's so many different business models out there from construction to real estate where it's not just you get the money every single day that shows up at your doorstep, right? Sometimes you're waiting for invoices to be paid. Sometimes you're waiting for manufacturers to pay you out. Sometimes you're waiting for contract fulfillment, right? There's so many different variables of payments. And unfortunately, with business, you have to pay bills and pay materials and supplies and invest every single day, right? So it's not just you get money and then you're able to spend it. No, you got to spend money and then, you usually get the money after that, right? So that's where it's just super tricky. And I think that's why our business has seen the success it's seen is it's that niche of we understand small businesses' pain and problems, and we give them a solution and offer to basically, ease that pain so they can continue rolling with their business, right? So So it's just all different varieties.
That's awesome. So I guess let me ask, before you got to this point in your business where you're really thriving, I see your Instagram. Just, by the way, if you're not following Ken on Instagram, you are blowing it. That's why I call him the lead god. His IG is the lead god. It is, not only is it just super inspiring to see it, but I love because you're a family man. You've got your business going on. You really have everything going. I imagine right now you've probably never been happier or more fulfilled, just considering what I see on your profile and whatnot. But take me back before you got here. So have you always been an entrepreneur? Were you kind of someone who was just like, I don't believe in the educational system, I've just wanted to sell and kind of run businesses? Like, has that always kind of been your background and mantra?
Yeah. So funny enough, no, right? Like, I got into sales probably when at the age of like 21, 22, just because I was so broke. I was serving before. I tried to do the college thing. I knew it wasn't for me, right? I was working serving jobs, and then I had to get two serving jobs, and I was still broke, right? So I was just out of desperate. I was like, what can give me like an opportunity to like just make my life easier, right? I wasn't trying to make $1 million. I was just trying to make my life easier at that point, right? And I had a buddy working in mortgage sales, and he got me a job, just like an opening position, right? Straight opening position. And I just worked my way up from there. So I worked at a mortgage company for a little bit, for almost like 2 years. And that's where I kind of really saw that guys were making 10 grand a month, 20 grand a month, 30 grand a month, 50 grand a month, 100 grand a month. And I was like, whoa, like my mind was like blown, right? Like, you mean like all I have to do is, you know, do what this guy's doing, and I can potentially make that kind of income, right? So it really opened my eyes what is possible. So it led me down the path of, you know, going to get my mortgage license, all that good stuff. And at that time, rates were really, really low. And the rates started creeping up again, and the whole refi boom at that time kind of just got like, you know, kind of got beat up a little bit, right? So I could have stayed in mortgage and kept doing that, but I decided to switch kind of products. And actually, my brother, my business partner, he was doing business lending, and he was working for a company, and he was said it was just blowing up, right? And this was probably, you know, back in 2014, 13 probably. And so he just said, hey, this market's like, this is a super interesting product. I never heard about it before, and I was like, all right, let me see how it's gonna go. And I kind of used him as a test dummy, right? And he used to give me all the clues, right? A lot of leads, great product, a lot of need. And so I made the switch over to business funding in sales. And, you know, I didn't just crush it right away. I didn't make a bunch of money right away. It took me almost a year to 2 years to really like start doing well. You know what I mean? And I actually got fired from that job that I was working at. I was working there for about a year. I got fired. And then, but in my head, I was like, okay, should I switch industries again? Should I do something else? Maybe it's not for me, but I just knew that I could do it, right? Like, so I'd have a good month and I'd have a bad month. And I couldn't just really figure it out. You know what I mean? Because my first really, you know, in-depth sales from start to finish of, you know, a different product. So I ended up working for, bounced around for two other companies. I landed at one company, and the first month I made like 10 or 15 grand, like commission, right?
And you're probably like, hooked at that point.
Right. And because I was like, I knew I can do it. Right. I wasn't ready for it, or, you know, I had to wait for something to click within the process of the sale for me to kind of work. And then that's when I kind of like, I call it the money glitch, right? You figure out something that you can do really well, that's dependable, that's repeatable. And I figured out that I can sell this product really well. And, you know, from there, I just started making really good money. And I was only there for about less than a year before I started my company. So, once I knew I can sell this product, what was my next thing? Like, okay, hey, I want to make more money, right? What's my path forward? I can keep working with this company and try to increase my income. But I just, you know, I was the top person at the company. I knew there was some things I didn't like there as far as like leads and operational stuff. And I just figured I could probably do it better, right? So before jumping into starting my company and thinking I'm going to be some like rock star and entrepreneur and do all this stuff, I did something very important I think most people don't do, right? I started figuring out the marketing stuff, right? So in my head, if I can figure out the marketing before I quit my job, right? If I can figure out the lead gen, if I can figure out how to generate customers for a cheap cost, I can generate a lot of them. I know I could do the sale, right? So all I have to do is figure out all the other stuff of the processing and all that stuff in between, which I did, you know, on my own, right? For a short period of time. But I figured out eventually I can generate a bunch of these leads. Now I can do the sale. In the first month, I mean, it was like 60, 70,000 in income, right? And so that's what I think is like super important, because I hear a lot of people like just jumping into entrepreneurship and doing these things, but they don't have they didn't do the prep before that, right? Whereas like they didn't do all the work that was necessary prior to that. And then that's when they're like, entrepreneurship is hard, they're gonna fail, and the business didn't work. And they didn't do the necessary prep leading into it. And then from there, I just slowly kind of grew my company.
Yeah, well, I think it's a couple of interesting points there to unpack. So to start with, it really makes me intrigued and interested, because I think about that where you did it the right way, where you were kind of a fly on the wall. You saw kind of, you know, the black tar heroine of making money, and that kind of came in. You obviously wanted to, you know, live a light, nice lifestyle. So you saw that, but you took a very tactful approach, which is seeing it from the inside out as opposed to the outside in, where you were an employee. You were making money there. You kind of figured out the process. You're probably thinking about it, being very intentional about, you know, what notes you like, what notes you didn't like in the process. And then you said it there about the marketing side. And if you can dial in the marketing side, when you have a good product and you kind of are fulfilling someone's need for what they have, kind of like how we met, you aren't really selling. You're relaying information and providing a solution and an opportunity for someone. And I think it's the biggest thing about sales as well. Is if you really feel like you have to sell someone, that's not a fun place to be in. I think we've all at some point in our life been in a position where we're really pushing hard if we need a buck, or, you know, we're kind of early in our career. But I think the older you get, the more you realize is you want to, you know, leave, you don't want to have to force someone to do something they don't want to do themselves. So it's super great when you have a product that, you know, you have the right marketing, have the right messaging, and then you can easily convert people because the pump has been primed and there's a solution that you're solving for, right? So what about the marketing side did you think that gave you a competitive advantage that other people weren't doing? Was it just kind of utilizing, you know, Google from a more optimal perspective in a business place that maybe wasn't saturated and, you know, didn't really have the best business minds and infrastructure around it? Like what gave you your competitive edge to really light, you know, the fire for the company?
Yeah. And just before I get there, just to touch on what you said about sales is when I started making money in sales, and I'm just such a belief in sales and what it did for my life, right? I never made money when I sold. I started making money when I was consulting. And that's the main difference.
Yes.
When you're consulting somebody, it's not for everybody. And that's what you got to understand. But if you can fit, you know, the benefit of the product, of how it's going to better their life, that's when the money glitch started and, you know, the money came in, right? I was never making money before, and I'd have big months and low months, and it was just chaotic, right? Because I was selling out of just desperation and need, right? But I started making money when I was consulting somebody. How can my product, what I'm offering you, benefit your current situation? And before I, you know, blab you to death with my benefits, tell me about your problems. What's going on in your life? How can, you know, potentially our product be a fit? And you want them to let them give you as much information as possible. And again, not to strategically sell them. You're trying to figure out their pain points so your product can fit perfectly within that pain point. So it's an easy decision for them to move forward, right? I think everybody wants to be sold, but they want to be sold in the way of feeling being helped, right? And they don't want to feel like
and being heard.
100%. Yeah. So we tell our sales guys that all the time, and everybody, be a consultant. You're never going to make money just selling. So yeah, it just a little,
well,
you know, thought I had while you're talking.
Well, no, I really love that tangent, and it's so powerful. And I feel like with Lone Star Capital, the way I look at it, and for those watch people will understand this, and you'll appreciate this as I see you wearing a nice little Audemars Piguet on your wrist today. It looks like if my eyes serve, I know you had the Oyster Flex of the day, but the way we look at Lone Star Capital is, we're selling you an opportunity to give you a Panda Daytona at retail. You're not going to buy that. No problem. That's fine. And then it's like, if you don't see the value in that, then there's nothing I can do here. But you just mentioned so many great points, which is, you know, if you're in the sales position, you really need to understand and qualify what your customer or client may want. And if you're a salesperson who's just rambling and talking the whole time, you were never, I mean, maybe you will, because inevitably, if you talk to enough people, you're going to get business, but you are not going to be successful long-term, and your competition is going to beat you because you need to be listening. You need to be asking good questions and figure out their solution. And we're at a position, I'm sure you are too, where you probably don't want to work with everyone. You want to work with the right people. And maybe it's not a fit today, but it could be a fit tomorrow. But how amazing would it be if you actually say, hey, you know, I don't think we're a fit today, but perhaps in the future we could work together. Here's something that might fit your solution. That is truly the biggest way to build trust in a relationship. And if
Yeah.
you have a long-term mindset and vision for what you're doing, then it's going to work itself out. I remember when you came to us, you had a need, and I think we hopefully solved for it, which is super crucial. And it was a solution-oriented conversation, not me saying why we're the greatest thing since sliced bread. So we
Yeah.
get to earn the right for you to think that once you're in our systems, you're going to understand how great our process is, and hopefully we can make you a lifetime customer. But I think it's so crucial there. So I know you kind of mentioned this, but when, or you haven't mentioned this yet, but we've kind of talked about this before, not on air yet. So I'm excited to hear this. But what year did you start the company Direct Funding Now? And kind of tell us about how, you know, the starting process, the spikes, the ups, the downs, because if I'm not mistaken, you had a lot of headwinds when COVID hit, right? And then there was a boom after. So can you kind of walk us through what that was like navigating a business in California with all that going on, with all the craziness?
Yeah. So, I started the company in 2015, and, you know, it took us a minute to kind of get the ball rolling, meaning like, I just didn't want to bring people on. I was always like a huge, like, advocate for like, hey, if I knew what was successful for me, which was like appropriate lead gen and, you know, good leads, and then that sales individual, myself or anybody else, can make, you know, some good money. Right. So I was always an advocate of generating a lot of leads. I've just been like obsessed with it, 'cause I knew leads, you know, essentially turned into dollars if, you know, worked properly. Right. So, I was figuring out the marketing game, and then we started hiring people pretty quickly. I think after like 3 or 4 months, we started hiring people. My brother, my business partner, joined in after like a month or so. And then it was kind of off to the races. Right. So, we started hiring our first person, then our second, and then, but I always made sure there's enough leads for the team, right? I never hired a bunch of people and then the team was diluted. The people weren't making money, because I knew if that salesperson that we were recruiting, good salespeople too, that I knew from within the industry, if they weren't making money, they're going to go somewhere else. So like, it was like a fear-based like motivation for me, meaning like, hey, this person's generating me a lot of money. If I don't give them opportunities, if I don't give them the right tools and marketing and leads and systems, whatever it is, to be successful, they're going to go somewhere else. And I knew that. And it's always stuck to me to this day. If I don't give my team the tools and resources to be successful in the sales department and in other departments as well, but mainly like sales, right? They're going to leave and go somewhere else. So we're very, very aware of that. We're very, very fear motivated of, you know, making sure our team has what they need to be successful. And that's why our competition, you know, we're able to beat them out, because maybe it's, they look at it differently, you know, as an owner employee, we look at it as, you know, sales driven, heavy marketing tools, resources, maybe a little bit too much almost at one point. Right. But these guys know that we're never going to do bad on them. Right. And we know that we're constantly pushing for them to maximize their income potential. So again, I think it's just a psychology change of thought process between, you know, how people run their businesses. But yeah, so we grew our company pretty big. I think, you know, before COVID hit, I think we probably had 50 or 60 employees, right? The business was growing just rapidly. So we grew up from one person, myself, to, you know, sit in an apartment, to over 60 employees, from really 2016 to 2020, right? And the business was growing. It was massive. And at that time, like, I didn't, like, I knew kind of what I was doing. Obviously, we figured out some good stuff, but like, it was still so new to me, right? Like, it was my first business and it took off right away. So there's so many challenges with that, with like managing personnel, just structural stuff, marketing, hiring. It was just all new to me, right? So like I told you from the beginning, like I never had this dream of being an entrepreneur. It just was like an organic thing for me. How can I just better my life, right? And that was it. And ultimately, how can I make more money? That was like my major driving factor, right? So, you know, the company grew so fast that there's so many mistakes and so many pains. And, you know, when COVID hit, it basically shut down our industry. We do small business lending, like legitimately decimate our industry. So,
and seemingly only people that can be open are, you know, the big conglomerates like Walmart,
right? Yeah.
and Home Depot, which is so anti-America at its core, because the backbone of this country is small businesses and people having their own American dream, you know, depending upon how big their business is, right? So it's a massive shame, obviously, that occurred. But unfortunately, yeah, where you sat, you kind of got probably decimated momentarily, seemingly.
Yeah, it was brutal, you know, and just, you know, building something up and having it pulled from your, you know, from you without anything you did, right? It wasn't a bad business move. It wasn't bad, you know, anything I did, right? So I think that was like the hard part for me. And it also too, it made me feel a little bit better, right? It wasn't like I failed because I made stupid decisions. You know, my business shut down overnight and we had to lay off 95% of our employees. And we just kept a really small crew to kind of see how things were going to go. And luckily I had really great people that believed in me. And we were all just all kind of waiting for the market to open back up because no business were opening. They're opening, they're closing. So imagine like our business of like, we fund small businesses. Our, you know, how we fund these businesses is basically off of their cash flow, how they're operating. So if there's no cash flow coming in, you know, that's a very risky, you know, business model, right? So it was just like this weird step game, like, okay, we're funding little deals and then like we close down again. And it took about a year, right, for everything to kind of get going again and the businesses and the economy for small business to open up. And then once businesses open up, like we knew what to do, right? So I have this kind of like mantra in my head, right? You figure something out once, or you scale the business once, you figured out some things. You do it two times, you got a blueprint, right? And I say you do it three times, you're goated, right? So you're forever goated, right? So it's just a little funny thing I tell these guys all the time. But what I did know is I already had a blueprint how to scale the company before, right? So all I had to do, and it was definitely a different economy, different market, different everything, right? But I knew the blueprint, so I knew I can do it again. So I think I just slowly just stayed in it, and we built it, you know, basically person by person again, legitimately, because all of our employees kind of left and did other things. Everyone moved out of state. And it was just a, you know, huge, you know, disbursement of everything, right? And we slowly built it up person by person again. And we had just a monstrous year after year, just double digit growth, right? So I think this is because we had a good blueprint. We had the strategies already. We had the mistakes we already did. We don't want to do that. We've already did that before. So it was almost like it was easier the second time around. You know what I mean? Like, and there was not.
Because you didn't fail. You didn't fail or mess up. You didn't, you know, as you said, really get a DUI or have some, you know, bizarre, you know, mishap or slip of tongue or something of that nature where, you know, you have a Google article that's, you know, not the best. It was just a, hey, competition got, you know, or the market got weird.
Yeah, for sure. So I think it was just like, I had a little bit of like confidence coming out of COVID, knowing like, hey, it wasn't like anything I did, right? So, but the biggest fear was, are they going to shut down business again? Are they going to do all this stuff again? And like, is it a bigger wave of COVID going to come back? Right. So you had all these, like these fears, you know what I mean? Of like, what's going to happen. But at the end of the day, like I realized I can't control what happens out in the marketplace. You can't, your brother, your sister, your mom, the biggest billionaires and entrepreneurs in the world, they can't control. What they can control is what they do on a daily day basis. Right. So as long as I come in and I show up, and I work hard and I outbeat my competition and I keep investing, I keep trying, I eventually will hit the marketplace and the opportunity at the right time. And then boom, everything hits and then it takes off. It happens every single time, right? So leading up to COVID, if I would have just, or not leading, after COVID, if I would have sat back and said, hey, you know, woe's me, or, you know what I mean? Not, you know, kept learning, kept trying, kept doing all these things. I figured out some really, really, you know, awesome things that really helped catapult my business during COVID because I had nothing to do. So I was investing time and money and resources that I didn't want to spend, right? To kind of figure some different marketing strategies or tech strategies, all the stuff. And then once everything kind of hit, boom, we just blew up. We blew up even faster, right? And we blew past our competition and they're wondering what the heck we did. But again, it's all the prep time that you're doing in the down times and the slow times that eventually hit. And then your business blows up. You know what I mean? And everyone's going, whoa, like, how did they do that? Like,
yeah, you're an 8-year overnight secret? Success. You're an 8-year overnight success that all of a sudden you blow up and everything, you know, comes into place. And do you think COVID was actually a monumental opportunity because maybe perhaps your competition was on the sideline or felt mentally defeated and you kind of stay positive? Do you think that was part of, you know, the massive, you know, gain in the marketplace you ultimately got?
Yeah, for sure. I think it wiped out a lot of competition. You know what I mean? It changed the market. It changed everything, right? So I think it just, anytime there's like a shakeup, I think you've heard this, right? There's blood on the streets. You know what I mean? Like anytime there's a shakeup, there's opportunity. And it is sometimes the opportunity doesn't hit you right away. Sometimes it's a year down the line, maybe 2-3 years, whatever it is, right? But as long as you're putting in the effort that you need to be doing every single day, You know what I mean? Consistently, religiously, almost obsessively. Eventually, the market will hit with whatever products you're offering, and then your business takes off. You know what I mean? And it's just, there's, and that's what I've learned. So I just learned that is keep my head down, I just keep showing up every day in the office, even though I don't have to, even though I don't want to, right? Just like the gym and all that, you know, the same, you know, metaphor for that, right? You just show up and you just keep doing what you have to do. And then eventually you turn around and you're like, whoa, I got a big business. I got something really happening here, you know? And I think that's just the, and that's true for any entrepreneur out there that's struggling or going through things, and maybe they're thinking they're not it. And just look in your marketplace. Is there guys doing it? Yes. Are they doing it at a large scale? Yes, most likely. Then it's possible. You just haven't figured out the right formula yet.
Yeah, no, I think you said it so well, just, you know, the three times you're goated. There's a blueprint out there for success, and it's not rocket science. It's just putting in the work every single day. And
so basically the formula for success, right? And, you know, what people are having to do to, you know, put the pieces in place. It's not rocket science, like you said, right? It's just putting the right piece, the right formulas in place. So that way you can, you know, take advantage of the marketplace.
Yeah. And success leaves a blueprint. Ultimately, success leaves a blueprint. If you can see someone do it, you can implement it. You just have to stack your chips accordingly and let it go over time. And I think if you do that, it will come. But I think one thing Rob says, the principal and founder of the company, is people always overestimate what they can do in 1 year, but underestimate what they can accomplish in 5 years, right? Yeah. AKA the, you know, overnight 8 year success, right? So it's kind of funny. So can you kind of walk through as well what happened to your employee base during COVID, and then kind of over years from 2020 to 2021 to 2022 to now 2024, how many employees you've added on to your team and system?
Yeah. So it's funny, like during pre-COVID, we didn't really have any like technology. It was very like limited tech stacks and like, if anything, right? Very, very basic. And during COVID, we really started investing in technology. So, you know, I think we had 50 or 60 employees at the time prior to COVID. And then once COVID happened and we rebuilt, we learned that we can use basically technology to our advantage, right? Where I had a department doing like one task, and it was like 10 or 15 people. We were able to automate it, build a tech stack around that. And now the thing works night and day, 365 days a year. And it costs us, you know, just a small investment to build out. And then now that thing's forever producing. So, so I think we slowly built it back up, and we vary based off of like our sales team size, anywhere from like 50 par employees total, you know what I mean, to like 40 ish. It kind of depends, right? But right now we're on a really big hiring phase. So, the goal is to keep hiring, but, again, we're not in like a rush, right? I think that's the biggest thing. You want to go at the flow of where you're at in your marketing, in your marketplace, and the product, right? And your training and all that stuff. So it's not just about just like massive expansion, because that's when you lose money. We've done that multiple times in our business where we just, all right, we're just going to hire as many people as we want, and you have, you know, and it looks great, but economically is it good for your business, right? Your business is no more than a tool to generate revenue and profit for not just yourself, but for your employees, and provide value for your customers. And you have to be able to sustain that, right? So we've learned how much we should be investing each month, how much we should be scaling each month. And we do it organically, right? And so I think if you look at it more of not so much as like a number, but more so of your internal strategy and your comfort level and what you feel comfortable with, right? So I may have a competitor that's willing to invest 10 times as much as me, right, into all these different things. My comfort level is not like that. I like to be very systematic and very approachable about stuff, because I want to be able to withstand market changes and dynamic changes and everything that goes on in the marketplace, right? So like, it's almost like, you know, we're like this turtle. I know it seems like we're growing fast, but we just keep at our own pace. I don't pay attention to what my competitors are doing. I listen to them. I hear about them. I definitely pay attention to them a lot, but I don't, you know, feel like I need to chase them at any point. I know where I am at as an entrepreneur and a business owner, and it's to provide a value for our employees and our customers, right? And if I consistently do that and we do it extremely well, my business just organically grows, right? So I think it's not so much of just like a race to the finish line for employees or revenue. And believe me, I'm obsessed with growing. Like, I believe with, you know, to my heart and heart, if you're not growing, you're dying. If you're not improving, you're going to be taken out. And I believe that. And it's a fear of mine, right? So if I want to continue providing a life for myself, my family, my employees, I need to improve myself and I need to improve our business. And we need to improve our optimization, our technology and our marketing, our training. Everything needs to be proved consistently, right? And I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, once entrepreneurs get to a certain level and they've made some money and they have some success, is they start to feel like I've made it and I've done something, right? And for me, there's billion-dollar companies out there. How can I look at myself in the mirror and be like, wow, you've done something of value? Yes, I can be proud of what I've done and I can be, you know, but there's so much more opportunity out there, right? So I think that's just that thought process when I wake up and I feel like I've done something, like I can be proud of myself and I can be proud of our team and proud of our numbers and proud of the awards and the Fastest Inc. and all this stuff. But there's so much opportunity out there. There's so much marketplace out there still. And that's what drives me and motivates me, right? And it's not so much the dollar amount because I know that's a byproduct of success, but it's building something of such massive value and impact that it changes not just your life, but my life and everybody around me. And that's what drives me to today, ultimately. So hopefully that kind of
I love that. No, it does. So speaking of a couple of things, and I think you mentioned something, and I want to really expand on this thought, which was, you know, you could just hire to hire, but you may, you know, run into a couple of things. You could overhire, end up spending a lot of money on training for someone to not be the right cultural fit. Mm-hmm. And which brings me to thought of culture. So you have an in-person office, you got a sales team, you got the gong, you got the floor there, right? A bit of a boiler room, I'm sure, to a certain extent, which is fun. We've all been there before if we've been in sales, probably to a certain extent. But what's your kind of perception and outlook on culture and building the right teams? Because as an entrepreneur, you're going to have to hire people, you're going to have to train people, and then you have to be in more of a managerial position, not, you know, the ones in the trenches selling anymore. So do you have any sort of philosophy or systematic approach to the hiring and firing process and, you know, who you think might be a good fit or not as it pertains to your team and kind of your wants and goals and how your team currently sits as it stands today?
Yeah. So I think building culture and, like, you know, basically shining your vision from the top down, right? It's taken me a while to learn that stuff. That's been actually a little bit harder for me because I'm such an in the weeds guy, right? I can go in my office and work for 10 hours. And just look up and be like, oh crap. You know what I mean? Like the day's gone.
Yeah.
Right. Like this is how I just very hyper focus when I do tasks. And when I'm like, you know, when I got my sights set on something, like that's all I can see. Right. It's just like completing it and getting to the next task. Right. And so it's been a learning curve. When the company pre-COVID was going up, it was just such a rapid thing. And there's so much growth and revenue and everything just rolling at you so fast. You kind of just don't really know what you're doing. Right. And I think that taught me a lot about, like, you know, mistakes and things I should have done differently and how I should have been more vocal about what we want to do here and all that stuff. But then the second time around, I'm way more present on the team. I'm way more present about where we want to go. I'm way more present about, you know, voicing, you know, what I think we need to be doing to be successful. And also too is like, not just what we need, meaning like the employees need to do, but what do I need to do, right? So I tell them religiously every time we have, you know, meetings, weekly, monthly meetings or whatever it is, what am I going to do to make you guys successful, right? Hey guys, this is what I'm working on. This is what our team's working on the back end to make sure that we're beating out our competition, that we're getting a better product, that we're faster within our competitors, right? This is what we're doing. And we're not going to sleep until we're, you know, successful at these things. And then we're going to move on to the next thing. I got all these new things I'm working on in marketing and technology, right? To improve your guys' potential, earning potential, right? And I think it's just voicing that from the top down, because sometimes they look at you as the boss or the owner and the guy that's making all the money. And it's not the good way to look at it, right? You should be looking at it as that guy's like working his ass off every single day. And I can work for someone like that, right? And I want to work for someone like that. I think that's the biggest problem that I had, you know, when I was working for people. I saw it in some people, but some of the owners, I just didn't feel like they wanted as bad as me, right? Like they're not showing up, they're on vacations or here this day. I'm like, dude, I'm going to smoke this guy if I ever get in business. You know what I mean? I'm going to smoke him. It's done. And I do. We smoked all of our local competitors around here. You know what I mean? They're not in business or they're just running small little things. And maybe that's okay with them. And that's fine, right? But that's not fine for me. That's not okay with me, right? I take a very, very personal that I have people wanting to join my team and wanting to work for me. So I don't wake up every day like feeling like I figured out something. I wake up knowing that it can change at any point and they can leave me at any point, and I better provide a great product, a great service, a great training and environment for them to be successful. If they're successful, they're going to stay with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like in today's world of just entrepreneurship and online and all those different opportunities you see, people can go do what they want, right? And it's a real thing that they want to work with you for some reason, you know? And I think you should really be sharing your light on that.
Yeah, it's the biggest compliment in the world if someone wants to work with someone. And you've hit a lot of key points there that I want to once more unpack. So it's very interesting, as I think a lot of people as employees maybe look at the bosses like they're, you know, this guy who's fat and happy and, you know, doesn't care. But the reality is they do care. At least the good bosses and good teams and good businesses do. I can only speak from my experiences with Kent and Rob as the principals and founders of Lone Star, my bosses. They don't make me feel like some employee or that, you know, my voice isn't heard. But guess what, everyone? They get paid last and they accrue all the risk. Okay. So there, you're out there probably spending a bunch of money where maybe a lot of employees, I'm sure your team does because they know how much you care. But I think a lot of employees don't realize that they get paid last and you get paid first. And they also have the upside if things go well, but they also accrue 100% of the downside. So for instance, if there's earnest money deposit or money coming up, guess what? They're the ones that have to put that money up, not me. And then I get receipt of getting paid and bonus this, that. So I think it's really crucial to consider the other end of the spectrum, which is what you have to go through as an employer. And then on top of that too, you know, having people where you can be approached and caring a lot is super important. And that's definitely something I think that you come across as well, doing a good job, which is building the right team and building the right culture and infrastructure there. And, you know, it's not easy to be in that position. You know, I come from kind of an interesting background. This is kind of the first job I've had as a, you know, W-2 earner, if you will, because I had my own residential real estate business. So I kind of have this inherent urgency deep down where I know that, hey, if I want to get paid, it comes with me selling. So you better, you know, get your acting gear and start doing the work. So I can really appreciate their perspective where they've done that. And now they've created an ecosystem, a machine where I can get paid and everyone else can get paid. And we have systems and they've got employees, you know, they have the opportunity to feed families. I'm sure you look around like, you know, honestly, of course, the money is great, but even on a more deep and level is, you know, when we die, we can't take that with us, but you'll be able to tell everyone, yeah, I was able to feed people's families and people's kids through colleges and, you know, help them live a more enhanced and rich lifestyle. And I know someone like yourself, you really care about that. And a good boss does care. And I'm sure you have an ecosystem where people's opinions can be heard and that's there. So how do you manage feedback and, you know, keeping people happy? And then also just the firing process if it comes to that. And if you ever had any, you know, family hirings and firings and fits there that you kind of had to work through that might've been uncomfortable as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you know, you got to, once the business gets to a certain point, you got to understand that there's going to be, you need to have more structure, right? So there's got to be like, you still want an open door policy because it keeps the information flow very, very, you know, consistent, right? Which is very important, right? But you still need structure where, you know, you want org structure, you want managers, you want, you know, certain departments to handle certain things and certain staff to handle certain problems, right? So at some point, there has to be some org structure. It can't just be a slosh fund of ideas and open doors. It's too much. There's too much going on in the day-to-day business where there needs to be some structure. So once you have the business structured appropriately, right, through some type of org structure, the information flow can get to the certain people so they can make decisions, right? So I think that's the most important thing, because once you figure out the marketing, once you figure out the business model and the product, you got to figure out the org structure, right? And then you got to start hiring good people to fill those org positions to help you grow your business. If you put a bad person into a position of management or operational standpoint, they're going to derail the business. So you got to be very aware with that as a business owner at top, to be seeing, hey, how are these people performing in these tasks, especially managing and operations and all the stuff that need to be overlooked in personnel, right? So I feel like we've done a pretty good job of putting the right people in the right seats and then them giving them the tools and resources that they need so they can kind of operate almost independently. But obviously we get feedback of, you know, strategy and deployment, right? But it's really us at the top deploying strategies to our team. And then our team disseminates those strategies. And then we sit back and we look to see how those strategies, you know, played out versus hiring or training or marketing or sales or processing or funding or whatever that is, right? So at the top, you got to put, you know, put your guys' brain hat on with your team and give them some rope, let them implement some things, sit back and see how those strategies are deployed in your business, right? And then once you see those, you'll take the good things, and you'll extract the bad things, right? You take the good things, you extract the bad things. And eventually you have a good little working system. So I think that's really important. Set up the org chart for that. As far as like hiring and firing and all that stuff, I mean, it sucks, right? A, it's really, hard to get good people in the door that believe in your product or service. It's just a hard thing to do, right? There's so many options where we live and opportunity and, you know, so you got to sell them on your business, on the product and the marketing and everything for them to kind of want to work with you, right? And then at the same time, you need to make sure that they have the right support to be successful in any role they're at, right? And that's a whole nother ball game. But I think it's just, you know, you want to hire the right people and not just hire people just to fill seats. You know what I mean? And we've felt that in the past, you know, and that goes with family too. It's like, it's really easy to give family positions and jobs and stuff, but it can be to a detriment to your business. So be very careful about just hiring family just because, you know, it's Bob, the uncle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he may not be a great fit for managing, you know, some operational stuff in your business. Right. And then you feel bad about, you know, departing or whatever it may be. So I think you just be very aware. It's a business is not a game. It's not a, an ATM machine that you just spend and just, you know, and just try to scrape some little dollars for yourself. It's a value for the customer and your employees. If you look at it that way, who are you going to bring on to bring the best value and best opportunity for your employees and your customers? If you bring on the right people to manage those positions and do those tasks, then your business grows organically. But you put the wrong people in, it's horrible for your business. So I don't advise you bringing in people that just because they're family or whatever, bring in the right people because they're the right fit. And when they're not the right fit, unfortunately, this is not the gig. Now you can do it in a respectful way. You can help them find opportunities or whatever that is. But I look at this business very seriously. Maybe I'm too serious and a little like, hey.
No, that's why you're on
partner,
the top.
Yeah, my partner's way more lenient with stuff. I'm very like analytical, right? Like just look at the numbers, look at, you know, this and let's make our decisions, right? So I think he does have a good yin and yang to me. I'm very hyper focused. I'm very, you know, a lot of energy. He's very laid back, more of personnel, very like, you know.
A little good cop, good, bad cop.
Yeah, 100%. He's really good with people. He's really good with hiring and really good with just managing emotions. I'm not. I'm very just like one way, and it's hard for me to see outside the numbers sometimes. You know what I mean? But that's why it's good to have partners. I thank God I have him and the people that we built around us for managers. But so.
Absolutely. Well, and then what's next for your company right now? And what other businesses do you hope to plan on starting if you have time for? Do you have any other goals with regards to, you know, any other, you know, ventures that you would consider doing? I mean, obviously you're doing great right now, so there's no point to disrupt that. But do you have any other ideas for, you know, other maybe ancillary companies or something outside of what you're doing currently?
Yeah. So like, it's funny, like, I've tried like little other businesses on the side of doing this, right? Like similar sales, different products. And what I realized after doing these things over and over, doing a couple of them and, you know, investing all the time and energy into it, and eventually it doesn't work, not because I'm not motivated, it's because I'm not doing it 100% focused, right? So I kind of got to the belief after doing these little side things is just focus on one thing and do it really well. Now, if there's a secondary product that you can launch that's integrated in your system, then do that. Don't start a whole new business model, whole new demographic market. And, you know, some people are successful and they can do a bunch of different things. I can't. I need to be dire focused on one thing, one main strategy, right? And that's just how I operate. For other people, God bless their heart that they can do 10 businesses and all be successful. I just can't. I just, my brain doesn't work that way, right? So I've learned just to be able to, you know, bat away all these crazy opportunities that get approached to me all the time and just try to stay mainly focused. So our next step is A, just growing our internal business, but we're launching a funding arm of our business, right? So just another vertical within our company, right? So that's going to be funding the small businesses. We've been a broker primarily this whole time. We've done a little bit of funding, but this new funding arm is going to be funding the businesses directly. So I don't need to work with outside partners. And the reason why that's important for us is speed and transparency and better product and service. I look now, after years of doing this, I see what I don't like about what our products are offered. I see I don't like from our lending partners of the technology they're using and how they deliver their products and the speed of it. So I realized, like, hey, again, back to, you know, pre-starting my business, if I can do this better and I can do this faster, smarter, better technology, better service, customer service, I can outbeat my competition, right? And so basically that's our next model is launching our funding arm and utilizing our technology and our experience and our huge portfolios of business to essentially give our customers a better product, right?
Yeah.
And streamline the process and not have to cut the red tape, even though it's super fast now, but there's still red tape in my eyes where I'm like, dude, I can do this faster if we're doing it internally. So I think that's our main focus right now and just growing our current business and continuing just trying to provide a good product to the marketplace and just consistent effort moving forward. You know what I mean? I don't think we've done anything crazy. You know, I'm not on a yacht somewhere with, you know, 1,000 employee company, right? And it doesn't mean I need to get that, but I think, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done. You know what I mean? And I know that, and I know I have to show up to continue doing that. So
for sure. With that said, you mentioned technology. How is technology going to alter your space with AI and automation? Would you kind of want to tap into some of that potentially for kind of next steps to be kind of cutting edge to, I guess, outbeat your marketplace? And are you implementing any tools currently that utilize those two strategies of automation and AI currently?
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Like, and the AI too, that's like a buzzword, I think, but there's a lot of like little like
100%.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in between there that you can do for even to like customer outreach that you're seeing now where they can follow up with their customers or provide updates through automation and AI voice. But you also too is like, it's really more so like about like potential like underwriting and risk factors and automating a process of triggers and, you know, yeses and nos and, you know, positives and false to give information out quickly to, you know, personnel, right? Or another automated system so that can continue down the line. So I think you should be highly integrating technology into your business consistently. There's so many tools, there's so many new products that are launched. And I think it's just, again, just like with anything else, just trying things. And if you're not trying things and you're not investing in your business, eventually there's going to be another guy coming around the corner that invested more time and energy into this that's going to start winning your customers. That's going to be faster. That's going to be better. That's going to be providing a better product, a faster experience. You know what I mean? Or just an all-around better system, right? And then they're going to start winning your customers and then they're going to start stealing market share. So I think you should be highly invested into any sort of automation into your business. And that can be from simple to like extreme, you know, tech stack automation, right? And I think you should be looking just to start small and just build it out. And it's crazy because it's just like when I didn't know anything about like really like tech stuff, when I got really involved with it, you just start building out one thing and then it leads to another thing and it leads to another thing. And then all of a sudden you look back and you built out this crazy automation tool, right? So I think it's just using tech that's out available right now that's best fit for your business. And that could be as simple as setting up automated emails and automated SMS to go out to your customers and follow up and videos and, you know, whatever. There's just the more you have of it, the better, to be honest. It just takes time. I think you should just organically infuse it into your business versus thinking it's going to be some like magic pill that's going to blow up your business, right? Just infuse like these little like almost band-aids in your business to improve certain tasks and operational processes.
Without a doubt. And I think the biggest thing automation really is just streamline the process. But at the end of the day, it is our roles as humans, and people still want to talk to a human. They want to make sure they're not talking to a robot, and they want their hand held through the process. They want someone to guide them and wrangle them through the transaction to make them feel good, to ask an expert, to ask someone who's in the weeds of this day to day. So that's kind of our role to integrate, you know, better systems to streamline it and keep our, you know, operations smooth and lean, but to provide the human element that can't be replaced. Moving on to the next, you know, segment as well, or kind of topic, which is, you know, investing. Obviously, you know, we got fortunate enough to connect via Gil, your brother, who said, hey, you guys should, look at maybe Lone Star Capital, because this was the first kind of third party syndication you invested in. But how do you look at the world of, real estate investing and just investing in general? Do you have any kind of thesis or kind of strategy that you implement? Because now that you're, doing quite well in your business, now you get to look at the investing side to, ideally lower your taxable income, things of that nature. So what is your thesis, strategy, and plan, I guess 5-10 year short-term plan, perhaps, that you're looking to implement to, kind of make your money work harder for you?
Yeah. So I think, you can look at investments and you can get kind of blinded by a lot of shiny objects, right? You hear guys just about doing certain, like, for instance, let's talk about real estate, commercial development and residential development, and you see them making a lot of money and you're like, well, am I investing the wrong way? Investing is simply just investing, right? Like, I want to get my money working for me without me having to work for my money. I've already worked for it. Like, I want to invest it and have that money earn dividends and be able to grow that nest egg basically and earn more dividends, right? So for me, it was always just about working hard in my business, extracting the capital and earned money, and moving it into investment money, and you build the investment money. For me personally, that's my main objective, right? For others, your main objective might be actually investing is your main earning vehicle, right? Or
your job.
Real estate, yeah, or your job, where you might have to look at it a little bit differently. And you maybe have way bigger windfalls than me in real estate, right? And bigger flip opportunities and equity builds and all this stuff. But for me, I don't. My main task is my business, and I understand that. And I use real estate and other investment vehicles to deploy capital to earn consistent, reliable income, right? That's dependable. That's not crazy, huge potential, risks where the returns are bigger, but I like to have just safe, good returns. And then I just build that up slowly. And then over the years, every year, I just keep, allocating funds out for investments. So you're growing your portfolio. So for me, I look at strictly as an investment and then also tax benefit. So, and there's massive tax advantages to real estate and deploying your capital a certain way. And, you should definitely look into that as an entrepreneur. It's some of the best tax advantages out there. But I think, I like to sit and forget about it, right? So even other stuff that I've worked at, I like to have property managers. I do not want to be managing these portfolios or properties or anything like that, right? Give it to competent people. Do your homework. Get the best investments you can and let them do a better job than you can, right? I don't go on my sales floor and try to sell my product anymore. I haven't pitched a customer in, I don't know how many years, probably 7 years, you know what I mean, for our product. I have better salespeople than I ever was, right, that do that task. I have better people in technology. I don't try to go figure it out. I hire the right people to do those tasks that are way, way better than me, right? So I think it's about hiring the right people, getting the right team in place, and utilizing your capital, essentially just to build your nest egg, right? And I think my passion is, I love real estate. I love, development and stuff like that. But when I wake up every day, I don't think about real estate, and that's okay. I think about my operational and marketing and strategy and just business stuff, like in my current company. So at the same time, I want to, make sure that I'm, doing the right steps. So, when I first started making money, I didn't blow it on anything. I was driving a Honda Accord. I was living in an apartment legitimately and just, more
you
money than ever.
A Honda Accord. Yeah. You're not driving a Honda Accord anymore.
No. But believe me, that took years.
Yes.
To do that. Right. And I didn't, even when I had money, I didn't just go out and do it. I bought an apartment building before I ever bought myself a car, like a brand new real car. Right. And so that's just the way my thought process was, right? So it's just about investing for the long term and not thinking I've done anything successful, because I knew I didn't, and comparable to people that are out there in the world, right? So I think it's just about respecting the dollars you've earned, invest them wisely, and try to find the best tax advantages and, yield obviously as well that, you feel comfortable with, you know what I mean? But if you take a big swing and a super big risky thing, just be prepared to lose it. You know what I mean? But if you take a little bit more mild approach with still good returns, you can sleep at night. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, if I lost all of my money I've invested, it would be horrible. But I know that I can generate more money and my day-to-day, you know, skills that I've acquired, right? And running my business and doing other things, right? So I don't have that fear of investing, you know what I mean? And I never did in the beginning either. It was always just like, I'm able to generate revenue. I'm able to generate an income, grab this money, put it away, and then wait to invest it. And I just been doing that for almost, I don't know, 5 years now, like religiously, you know what I mean? And before that, I was just saving. I was saving. And then eventually when I felt comfortable, I started deploying capital. And I think that's a great strategy that's been beneficial for me. And I don't have to worry about anything anymore. I don't worry about ups and downs and ebbs and flows and anymore. I just cruise. And that's my financial freedom in my head, right? I just want to be able to operate. I want to be able to invest. I want to be able to try things. I want to try, you know, different investment vehicles, or I want to be able to invest in my business. And I don't want to have limitations to that and have fear to do that. So I want to be able to do that and feel good about it. You know what I mean? And not crush me if it blows up. But I understand if people have to do that. You know what I mean? And I
understand ways. Sure. Can you share, just before we wrap up the show, you've given so many great nuggets. So thank you so much for coming on and sparing an hour of your very busy day and time. And we do really appreciate it. Is there one lesson you can think of that you'd like to share to the audience that, you know, if they're starting a business or if they're getting going in their career that, you know, it took you a while to learn that you think might be actionable or, you know, really, really useful before we go?
Yeah. I think, you know, coming from where I was, you know, I actually got, you know, kicked out of my house when I was 16, 17 years old, and I was couch surfing ever since then, you know, and I had no support, financial support. It was just legitimately me on my own, right? I actually dropped out of high school when I was 17 because I was like, I got to work or I'm going to go to school. Legitimately, those are the conversations in my head. So I'm like, oh, I got to go work because I need money, right? So I've just thought of, you know, I think, you know, after going through and this whole cycle and business and entrepreneurship, it just, after a while, you're going to get tired of where you're at in your life. Hopefully. Right. And I think the whole point of life is to improve, to better yourself, for self-development, to be better than you were last year. Right. And it's okay if it's taken a long time, but I think it's just consistent thought process of trying to be better. Right. And trying to do things better and try to live better and just try to, like, essentially go for something that you've, you know, maybe thought is out of your reach. And I think I've just constantly had that curiosity. And even though it sounds scary to other people, I never had fear of it. It was weird. I never had fear of starting my company. I never had fear of saving money. I never had fear of investing. I just don't. I just make calculated decisions mentally leading up to it, maybe 6 months up to that decision of, I think I'm going to do this. I think this makes sense. And you're gathering data, right? So I think it's just, you know, people need to try to look to better their lives more. And that's where I try to promote mostly on my Instagram. I know there's like flashy stuff on there and stuff too, but if you really like pay attention to what I'm saying, I want to better my life, right? Why the hell not? Why should I not go for the biggest goal possible when I know it's available? And it might take me 5, 10 years, 15, 20 years, but you know what? That time's going to pass anyways. So if I look back and in 10 years, if I don't try to better myself because of the pain and all the, you know, the issues that may arise with that and all the, you know, heartache, I'm going to be in the same spot anyways. I'm going to be, you know, hopefully alive anyway. So why not try to better your life? Why not try to improve your life? Because you're going to look back in 5 to 10, 15, 20 years, and that time's going to pass regardless. So why not put every ounce of, you know, motivation and desire into improving your life? Because then eventually when you do something and there's something, you know, major impact, and you'll know when that happens in your life, you're going to look back and you're like, thank fucking God I didn't just stay put. You know what I mean? Thank God I didn't just stay doing the same thing. Thank God that I made a chance on myself and I made a risk. And it doesn't mean you need to go start your business. It means just improving your life, improving, you know, your income. I'm a big advocate of trying to, you know, increase your income. You know what I mean? And I just think that, you know, earning potential, it helps you do a lot of things in your life, and it helps you provide a lot of benefits for yourself, your family, and your employees. And I'm just a big advocate of that. So you should always be looking to increase your income, improve and increase your life, living standards, I guess you could say, without like extending, right? So I know that's a long-winded answer, but I think it's just self-development and self-improvement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's super inspiring.
That's what I kind of just like to preach, you know, especially on social media. It's just like, don't quit, never give up, you know, even the days when I post that stuff and I have a shitty day and I want to quit that day, I just try to be like, just remember, like, where do I want to be in 5 years? You know what I mean? In 10 years. And if I stop now, then dude, my writing's on my wall. You know what I mean? Or I can wake up, dust my, you know, my knees off and the dirt and just keep rolling. You know what I mean? So I think that mentality is just a mentality that needs to be spreaded more. And that's why I like talking about it.
I know. I love it. That's super positive. And I really had kind of one of those moments in my life too, where I was like, hey man, you got to figure something out, but where you are, you can't sit still. So you better try something new and you better pick yourself up. And it's okay if you fail, but you cannot simply not try, you know, to try and to pick yourself up and fail forward is kind of the message there. So with that said, Ken, thank you so much for coming on the show, The Lead God. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch? I know you said you're hiring right now. If there's maybe someone maybe looking for a job, might be a fit. I know you got flooded, of course, for that. But where can people find you, reach out to you, maybe connect if they want to learn more about you and kind of connect personally?
Yeah, just mostly Instagram's like super easy. I have a little podcast on YouTube, and I just interview like really mega entrepreneurs that are doing things that I think are really awesome and you know, motivating. But I'm really just Instagram at The Lead God. Just hit me up, DM me. I actually reply to a lot of people. And you know, I just have fun with that. I just post things that I like and things that motivate me and things I think are, you know, visually cool and stuff like that. So I think, just hit me up and whether it's a job or just you know, just talk about entrepreneurship or hey, these are things that I've learned. I'm like super open. I just like to keep the information flow going. So hit me up there and come say hi.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We look forward to seeing you next week on Fun Friday. Peace.